And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
On the count.
The U.S. prison system incarcerates approximately 2.5 million people, the highest number of any industrialized nation, while prisons remain the fastest growing industry in the country.
All my people up in Ray Brown.
People everywhere inside of prison and out, where you at? Throw me gente. Y'all know how long I've been waiting to say that. I think I was at an event recently, open mic event, where I wind up saying, oh, my people, just missing WBAI, missing on the count. All our people. Todo nuestra gente, nuestro pueblo. We are back. Thank you so much. You are listening to another edition of On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Justice Report. I am here in studio, Stephen Humble Mangual, with my brother and associate producer, co-host, all around, just awesome human being, man, that I got a lot of love for and have a lot of love for the better part of the last 20 years, my brother, Andre Imani Ward. We are back. Andre.
Yes, sir. Good to hear you, Humble, and certainly I'm just a reflection of yourself. And to all of our listening audience out there, we're always really grateful and excited to be able to have you join us here at On the Count. For all of the people behind the prison gates and walls, as we always say, we remain in activist and advocacy mode, representing the issues that are important to you. And although you are not out here with us in the trenches doing the work to lift up and to elevate our voices and amplify them in a way that can affect meaningful criminal justice reform or criminal legal reform change, we know that you're with us in spirit, and we're with you in spirit while you remain there as you prepare to come and join the ranks of the many men, women, and people from our LGBTQ community who is doing this amazing work. So really excited to be here, Humble. We've taken a brief break while we were in this litigative process here at WBAI. And so we really want to lift up and shout out and thank all of the producers and individuals who were responsible with pushing back against the closing or shutting down of WBAI and by extension this radio station, this radio show On the Count. So really excited to be here, Humble.
I'm so grateful that you and I are both here together. Big shout out to all the crew, Yolanda Peterkin, Rusty,
AKA Harmony and Justice.
apologies to my sisters, but we miss you, man. We're looking forward to having all the crew in studio. We know that our sister is taking care of some family stuff too, so I just wanted to send you nothing but positive thoughts and for everyone who prayers. Just you know how it goes, man. I know firsthand what it's like, you know, to struggle with regards to wanting to be there for family members and feeling as if even I may have fallen short. And so I struggle with that myself. And that's a good thing, man. It's a good thing for those of us who are, you know, parents, and for those of us who are brothers and sisters and nephews and daughters and sons, just to want to take care of, you know, our parents and our loved ones and our siblings and our children and even those who we call family who may be not blood relatives, but you know how we do, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, native folks, man, black folks, man, Latinos, man, our families are, you come to my house, man, enough times and eat with me, you're a primo, so sure. You're a cousin, and there's as long as where one eat, two eats, where two eat, four eat, so that's how we are, donde come uno, comen dos, donde comen dos, comen cuatro. So, shout out to the crew. We also have in studio our boy Edwin Motion Santana,
mm-hmm.
And Motion is gonna say what up to our folks, man. Motion has been in behind the scenes for a long time,
sure.
And I'm really grateful to him. He and I have been in this for a long time. We were all in Woodburn together many, many moons ago,
mm-hmm.
and to be out here doing this work, I'm grateful. So Edwin Motion Santana,
peace. Well, peace. Can you hear me?
Yeah, man.
Oh, great. Peace to the brothers, the sisters, everybody that's behind the wall, everybody that's out here, the family members. Just want to share a lot of love to everybody that's on the streets and keeping the activism alive and keeping the brothers and, like, Eddie Ellis's name going strong.
Presente.
You know? Presente.
Sure.
Presencia.
Thank you, bro. Conciencia Resurrection. Where my Resurrection folks at? Man, mad love to my Resurrection, Conciencia family, all the people from Non-Traditional Approach. Big George Prendez. I gotta see Georgie, man.
Yeah.
Love Georgie.
Big shout out to George.
Porto, Medina, man. Oh,
that's
man.
Right. Carl,
yeah,
Dukes,
sure. Carl Dukes.
Larry Lukeman White and Keith Shaka.
Powerful.
And powerful. And,
you know, we out here, man. What
Ronald
the
Ronald Day, Dr. Right. Day, Una.
Yeah, man.
Like, it's so many, you know, so
T2?
Many.
Shout
T2.
Out to Angel T2 Rivera.
Yeah, it's so many powerful leaders that are out here doing this work, and many of whom had inspired us while we were inside and mm-hmm. served as mentors for us. And I know there's a sense of gratitude they have now that we have kind of taken on what they had committed their lives to much while they were incarcerated. So I just want to say thank you to all of them. And I'm sure at the same time, all of the women who were in Bedford Hills, who served as examples and models for all of the women who were incarcerated
Missy
Elliott and
Donna
and,
Hilton, who's in Puerto Rico right now. I'm so jealous, Donna. Yeah. I don't know if you're listening. You're probably not, because you're probably over there pulling some sugar canes.
Yeah, did I say Missy Elliott? Oh, my goodness.
Missy Wilkins.
We're going to have to play something of hers.
I know, right? But I certainly our dear sister Missy and Kathy Boudin and,
oh, I love
and
Kathy.
Sharon White. And just so many other women who were in Bedford Hills who are now out here, you know, assuming leadership in so many different ways and are now involved in policy change. And I remember Eddie would always talk about that, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously we would be remiss if we didn't lift up Yolanda too, who's a part of that mm-hmm. cadre and group of leaders who identify as women who are doing this work. And I remember Eddie always used to say, right, we would really, really want our women to be more involved in policy mm-hmm. work. And the narrative is so very important. Mm-hmm. But equally as important is the policy work that's necessary to affect systems change. And so now we see our women localized in, you know, the different arenas to affect policy change. We really want to say thank you. Robin McGinty, someone else who comes to mind,
yeah,
and who's certainly a powerhouse in her own right, as all of them are powerhouses. And either our folk from the LGBTQ community who are also involved in this work, we know that, you know, no one has a monopoly on this work. All of us are, you know, involved in this work in a way to lift each other up mm-hmm. and not you know, tear each other down, as the system has so meaningfully and intentionally done for so many, many years. And I think we've arrived at a place now that we have developed a unity of action without compromising our organizational or personal identities. And I think that's critical to systems change and elevating our issues in a way that's important.
That's right. Absolutely. That's right. Thank you for that, brother. And I just wanted to say that we are on for 2 hours today on the count. We want to send a special shout out and thank you to our brother Bob Law, mm-hmm. who will be on From the Streets, will be on next week. He is not on this week. He was so gracious to let us roll into his hour, which used to be our hour, so at 11 o'clock, which in many places throughout the state is still count time, we will roll on. So we were going to be on for 2 hours, and we're hoping that, you know, people tune in, new people tune in and listen to the work that we're doing here. So if you're listening for the first time, just don't change your dial. You haven't come across any alternative universe. You're not in a different time zone or whatever. It's like you're here. You're in the middle of the FM dial in New York City, and you're listening to voices of formerly incarcerated people who are in the struggle, in the movement, who are in this, man, just because we love what we do. We use, you know, everything that we've experienced, man, for the in the way of good, in the way of humanizing this thing we call, you know, justice, and bringing, speaking truth to power in a way that it's not just about highlighting issues and problems. It's about solutions. It's about us being there to play a role in the solutions, because Eddie always taught us this, man, for many years. I mean, I came into this, and I'm sure for Andre it's the same. We came into this, man, over 20 years ago, over 20 something years ago for some of us, and Eddie was telling us then, you know, it's we are more than the worst act that we committed, which is a quote that has been given to Brian Stevenson, and shout out to Brian Stevenson. Hi, Brian Stevenson, and the work that he's been doing with the Equal Justice Initiative down south, with the museum From Slavery to Mass Incarceration, and now the recent film True Justice, which I was showing recently, and there's going to be some viewings of it. I think I have an announcement that they're going to be viewing it pretty soon, so we could talk about that and just to announce that. But Eddie always told us, man, you know. So the quote that they're using for Brian Justice, Eddie was always on point, you know, way before. And beyond his time, you know, because he knew that we were all experts.
And, you know, I think about, I reflect on Eddie. Much of what we see now is really a direct manifestation mm-hmm. of the vision of Eddie. I remember, you know, many, many years ago, you know, when I was released from prison in 2009 and had joined Eddie and Humble and others here at WBAI and on the count. I remember, you know, he rolled out the policy initiatives mm-hmm. for On the Count, one of which was to decrease the amount of people that are on Rikers Island, right? And so I see now that we have looming overhead now, rather this looked sought to be coming into existence soon in 2026, the closure of Rikers. Mm-hmm. And obviously we see people now being released from Rikers and on bail reform, which we'll talk about. But then there's a reduction in the population now on Rikers Island. And again, I just think about and reflect, you know, as one of our policy agenda items for On the Count, that was one of them that Eddie talked about, in addition to several others around probation, right? Reducing the amount of time people are on probation. And I know organizations are doing that work now. So Eddie, this stuff has been good. I mean, I've been home 11 years almost, right? And so Eddie had this vision, and I'm so grateful to all of the organizations and individuals who've taken that vision and made it a reality. So through their own hard work, their own power and leadership has move those kind of ideas into reality. So a shout out to all of those who played a role in making, like, the closure of Rikers, the push to reduce the amount of people who are on probation for a long time, period of time, or who are still in that kind of work. Just want to thank all of them for that, because it's important, right? No one is like the main source of things necessarily.
It takes a village.
It's a buildup of years of study and analyses and dissatisfaction. And then people carry those things on through generations. So just want to thank everybody for that.
Yeah, for sure. And thank all of you who came out to court, man, supporting WBAI's struggle to come back. So shout out to all of you who came out to the court on Wednesday. I'm so glad. Shout out to all the volunteers, man. Absolutely. All the volunteers, all the producers and hosts and all the folks, man, who were pushing this, you know, bring BAI back, man. We were circulating that through our social media, and I'm so grateful, man, for all of you who remain, you know, supporters of this radio station. WBAI is the only left. We are the only, you know, community-sponsored radio station that exists, man. We are free from corporate control. We are free from sponsorship that says that you need to be censored. We are non-censored. We are free speech. And so this is something that is very dear to us. It was dear to Eddie, man. It's something that we need, especially in this day and age when there's so much opposition from people who are just spewing hate. And so, you know, we learned that in order to do away with hate, man, the only thing that doesn't away with hate is love. Mm-hmm. And so we're here doing this work, man, out of love, man. We love helping people. We love struggle. We love justice. We love equality. And so we're just dedicating our lives, man, to taking this into the next step and just using whatever we have in our disposal, whatever resource, man, whatever experience, you know, whatever we're going through, man, just to use it in a way of good, man, is to tell our narrative and our story in a way of helping someone else and to pushing this thing forward. And so I'm really grateful to all of you who stood by, man, and came out, you know, and circulated, you know, those memes and flyers and announcements and meetings and definitely when they came out on Wednesday. And they realized, you know, the courts realized, and I know a lot of us don't have a lot of faith in certain aspects of the courts, but, you know, sometimes we get a good victory and a decent, just victory. And there were people who knew that what was happening wasn't right. And so, you know, we need local control of the station. And so in order for us to continue that, we need help. So that's a good segue into asking our listeners to become WBAI buddies in the name of On the Count. Sure. We do have some BAI buddies. We do. We got on for 2 hours, so I'm hoping that we can get some to come through for these 2 hours. So if you're not a WBAI buddy, then please, please become a BAI buddy. If you're trying to figure out, you know, how to join the movement, how to be part of struggle, how to help us keep this radio station moving forward so we could keep hearing the voices that we hear, so we could keep highlighting, you know, the struggles of justice and love that we're doing, man, around all of these issues that we're going to be talking about. We're going to be mentioning a few of them today. Andre already mentioned, you know, Rikers and bail reform and what's going to be happening now coming in the new year with regards to raise the age, too. So this is huge, where this is a big thing. And it's crazy because there's, you know, there's going to be people who are going to be released from prison. Big shock. Mm-hmm. People are going to be released from prison. How about that? Well, guess what? There are a whole bunch of people who don't belong in prison to begin with. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. And people are saying, oh, but what's going to happen? You know, we're going to release all these people. And, you know, there's going to be pandemonium. And you know, and it's not, that's not the case, because it's been happening across the whole U.S. where people have been released from prison, you know. And guess what? They're grateful. And they're going back to their communities and their families as assets, and they're doing the best they can to become law-abiding citizens. There is no crazy, you know, criminality or explosion or rise in crime rates due to release from jails and prisons. It's just not happening. So if there is a positive correlation between releasing and crime rate, is that they're both going down at the same exact time. So how about that? How about that? Right. Huh? How about people who have been in prison, who paid their debt to society, and who have changed their lives and are living lives in a way that is giving back to their community? How about that? Right. Mm-hmm. No? How about a shout out to every single person, you know, however you identify across the spectrum with regards to gender and sexuality, man? How about human beings, man, who did time and came home and are doing incredible things, not just doing well and doing okay, doing incredible things in a short period of time. And hopefully we'll be able to have some of them either on the air or here in studio. We're waiting for a few of those wonderful people right now. But we have three of these awesome people right now in studio with, you know, Andre Monty Ward and Edwin Motion Santana and myself here. And we're just reflections of those who came before us. That's right. And reflections of those that are out there doing this work.
Yeah, it's really important. And, you know, when you think about it, mm-hmm. you know, I know listening audience as well, we didn't hear what subject you're going to be talking about today. Mm-hmm. And we will be getting into that. But as the 2 hours affords us, we really have to be reflective, and we really have to kind of lift up those who have come before us and be grateful that WBAI is still in existence and on, by extension on the count. And just really, really saying how grateful we are to all of those who fought to continue to keep this show on. It's not easy. As Humble mentioned, it's commercial free. It's listener sponsored, this radio station. And to have this local kind of means of media to be able to be in our spaces go away would be a disservice. So everyone who supports us, everyone who is listening to our voice today, we ask that you, you know, make a pledge, that you become a WBAI buddy, that you do whatever you can, whether through social media, Facebook or Twitter, promote WBAI, promote On the Count. Because this show and this radio station will continue to bring you the kind of news, commentary, and analyses that will inform you in a different way. Mm-hmm. And so we want you to continue to support the work that we do. And it's interesting, you know, we're talking about bail reform and you know, as one of our brief subjects, right, I know, like Humble was saying, like, there's this concern, overwhelming concern about what will happen when you release all of these people. When you look at these organs of propaganda like The Post and Daily News and, you know, these rags are, like, lifting up this idea of, like, a purge two kind of thing where people are just going to come out and be killing people and all those kind of things. We really want to just bring context to that because in no way is that what's going to be happening. 75% of the people who are detained and obviously are not released on bail have been arrested owing to either substance use issues or some property theft or something to that effect. So that's one thing to note. So it's not like, you know, people have certain kinds of offenses, which we're not necessarily trying to differentiate. But when it comes to more violent felony offenses or violent offenses, right, there is some thinking around that. But again, 75% of the people who are falling into this category of bail reform in many instances, again, have substance use issues or have some property theft kind of issues. And so that's important to really note. The other piece that's often not mentioned in what I've been reading over the last few weeks as it relates to bail reform and you know, newspapers promoting the negative side of this is that they fail to mention the idea of supervised release. So it's not like people are being released on bail reform and are not engaged in anything. There will be social workers and caseworkers assigned to those who obviously fall under this bail reform kind of issue. And there will be support to ensure that those folk will be reporting back to the judge who released them. And so a lot of the newspapers that are writing about these things in a negative way fail to mention those things, right? So there are some things in place, some organizations that also will play a role in supporting that effort, right? Whether it be the Fortune Societies, the Osborne, the other organizations that do reentry work, they will be involved. They will be involved in supporting those who are coming out and are impacted by the bail reform. So people need to know that, Humble. It's really important that they know that. They need to also know that this is not a precedent necessarily in New York, and precedent in the country per se, right? This bail reform issue has started, in fact, in New Jersey under conservative Republican governor, Governor Christie, and they had it there. So why we're having it now in New York and there's this big thing about it, but this is not something that's new. It's been done. It's been effective. And with the meaningful kind of resources and support that are in place relative to being under supervised release, relative to having social workers and case managers engage those who are coming out to give them the requisite services they need to keep them on track and engage with making their court appearances, all of those things serve the greater good. So we want to give that kind of context around bail reform to debunk some of the myths and dispel some of those false notions around, just all of these people who are vicious murderers coming out to kill people and to do harm. So that's so far away from the truth. And here at On the Count on WBAI, we want to make sure that you know that that is not the case. Again, they have supervised kind of release in Manhattan. DA Vance obviously is lifting that up as a part of what the work that they'll be doing to address bail reform too around supervised release, the social workers, case managers, and all of the services that they needed. So we just want to make sure we point that out around bail reform, and then we'll talk about some other things a little later.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. And I just want to say that for those who want to become BAI buddies, the number to call is 516-620-3602. It's the pledge line, but call and let them know. That's the phone number. So 516-620-3602. We hope people call and become BAI buddies. And for as little as $10 a month, you know, you call in, you let them know, listen, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of On the Count. It is a long, it's a commitment that you make, that we make to support the radio station in the long term. So as little as $10 a month goes a long way to keep the lights on, to keep us supported here, to make sure that, you know, this radio station stays in the control of our local folks and doesn't go and we have another kind of sort of coup taking place. So definitely we need to keep the lights on here. We need to keep the electricity going. We need to make sure that, you know, the very handful of paid staff are able to do what they do here at the radio station. We're so grateful to them for the dedication that they have, because I know they don't get paid a lot. Mm-hmm. but we need you to come through. If you're listening right now and you're not a WBAI buddy and you love the work that we do here at On the Count, or if you love any of the producers and any of the shows, I have a bunch of favorite shows on WBAI that I listen to regularly. You know, definitely Democracy Now. I listen to Howard Jordan. I've been listening to them for many, many, many years. And so I love both of them. But there's so many shows. I mean, obviously the show before us with David Rothenberg, we've been a fan of for many, many years.
While we were inside. To David Rothenberg and On the Count. Yeah. And it's really interesting, right, that when we were incarcerated, right, when this radio show On the Count was established in 2002. We were all excited. I was in Otisville prison at the time. And when, you know, it was announced that On the Count would be on, Eddie had informed us while we were inside that this would be happening. We were excited that there would be a radio show exclusively ran by formerly incarcerated leaders, and that our voices would be amplified through WBAI. And so, you know, just reflecting on that now, it's been over 20 years almost now that this radio show has been on. I know
February 2002. So we're going on, come February 2020. It's 18 years.
Right. So we're coming up on 20 years soon, and we're going to have a really, really huge celebration for our 20th anniversary in the years to come. And we're looking to bring out all of the notables and the contributors to the work of this show and those who follow the legacy of Eddie.
Yeah.
So it's really exciting, right, to know
shout
that
out to
this
Divine. Yeah, Dr. Divine Pryor was part of that very first show.
Sure, in the Center for New Leadership on Urban Solutions. And again, just all of those who have supported this show, right? It's been around a long time. And so we're really, really grateful for that.
Thank you all. Mm-hmm. And I was just told that, so the 516 number is disconnected. So to become a BAI buddy, just give the text, and it's give, the number 2, WBAI.org. So that's give. So thank you, Sean, for that. Apologies. I got to take responsibility. So I was given the pledge number, and we're still working on that. But you can text, and you can go online and just write down give, the number 2, WBI.org. So that's give, G-I-V-E, the number 2, WBI.org. And you can send a, just give them your debit card, credit card. I'm sure that you can, I'll get clearance, but I think you can also send a check made out to us as well. But for the most part, right now, we're working with the website. So there's also, if you go on the WBAI website, you can also go through WBAI's website, WBAI.org, and find the link that says to become a BAI buddy. What's that sound? I'm hearing music in the background.
Oh, somebody's phone. Somebody's phone.
So what we're going to do is we're going to wind up taking just a very short, short musical break, and we're going to recoup because we have our guests in studio. Thank you so much. Again, become a WBAI buddy for as little as $10 a month. We need our folks to come through as BAI buddies for On the Count. So give, the number 2, WBI.org. Become a buddy for $10 a month. Thank you so much. You're listening to On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Justice Report. And we will be right back in a matter of minutes, so don't you go anywhere. Whenever you hear that, right? Boricua's in the house. That's my theme song, man. I keep telling everybody, man. This is when I'm walking down the street. For those of you who've seen that movie, I'm going back now. When I'm walking down the street, this is my theme song. This is the crew that you're going to see walking back. You're going to see Mark Anthony and and his band following me while I'm just walking down the street. No, I'm just kidding. Aguanile, Mark Anthony's version of from the El Cantante soundtrack, which is actually the original is Hector Lavoe, which came out when I was a small child, and the original is also awesome too. So big shout out to salsa, man, to music, to culture. Big shout out to the African drum that comes through, and it's just a connecting theme to every music that we find, right? On the count, the Prison and Criminal Justice Report. Thank you so much for tuning in. You're listening to another edition. My name is Stephen Humble Mangual. I'm in studio with Andre Money Ward, my associate producer and co-host, and all around everything when it comes to this. This is definitely a crew thing, man. We support each other. We help each other. We make this thing because I'm telling you, I think it definitely takes at least four or five of us to fill one of Eddie's shoes, if that. Maybe a little piece of his shoe. I don't know. Right? Maybe just a little bit. All right, it takes like four or five of us to tie Eddie's. No, I'm just kidding. No, we got a lot of love for Eddie and the first generation, man. Shout out to Io Harrington. Shout out to Joseph Jazz Hayden. Jazz, sure. Love you.
And Rob.
Love you. Big Rob Sims. I was thinking about Rob. Rob,
yeah.
Love you, Rob. Shout out. I hope you're feeling better, man, and that you're doing well. I was just thinking about Rob this morning. I'm going to have to reach out to him.
Sure.
But, yeah, shout out to all the folks, man, who've come through and have made this show what it is today, and we're just trying to, you know, play our part. So we're joined in studio with Jose Hamza Saldana. I'm pronouncing that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
That's right. I know there's an ñ in your name, yeah. So I'm I know how to pronounce that. I'm bilingual over here, just showing a couple of my skills. No, seriously, Hamza Saldana, the director of Release Aging People from Prison.
In prison.
In prison. Release Aging People in Prison, rap. And so I'm so grateful. Thank you again for joining us once again on the count.
It's an honor.
I'm so grateful that you're here. We were together just recently, and so I guess we could talk a little bit about that. We're also in studio joined with Anthony Dixon, who is with the Parole Prep Project. And right. you're also director is your
right.
title?
Director of Community Engagement.
Director of Community Engagement. Thank you again for joining us again for another edition of On the Count. So grateful to both of you because the reality is, like, with live radio and what's been happening with BAI, it's like, guys, guess what? We're on the air tomorrow. What are you doing? and it's just, man, I'm just so humbled and grateful, man, because I know you guys could be doing anything and could be anywhere, and I know you had things scheduled and you probably moved some stuff around so you could be here, and I'm really super grateful for that. It means a lot. It really does. Not just for me and for the crew, but for our listeners, for the men and women and all the people who are whatever found in whatever spectrum who are currently inside our jails and our prisons, to hear your voices and to know that you're here. It means a lot to them and to us, and so thank you for that. And so why don't we start with, because one of our reoccurring themes has always been what's been going on around parole denials, especially for people who are either community ready, transform their lives, serve their time, just human beings that deserve a chance, man, to you know, complete the sentence they were given, right? And now to be resentenced every time they go to the parole board, but especially our men and women and folks who are 50 and over. You know, because it makes just no sense in any way, shape, or form. However you look at it, wherever you land on the political spectrum, left, right, center, right, whatever, it just doesn't make any sense, man, to have somebody in prison after 50-something, like they're 50, 55, 60 years old. Like, what do you think they're going to do when they get home except, you know, try to live a law-abiding, peaceful, loving life with their family and community? And so this is something that I know you've dedicated your life to, Hamza, and so I'm grateful, you know, for you for coming out after 38 years. 38 years, 4 parole denials.
That's right.
And so I'm so grateful. Shout out, man, to the late, great Fareed. Oh, man, I was with Fareed in Woodburn, and we were organizing way back when, and I knew, because he's always, to me, he's always been one of the, and always will be, one of the most intelligent, dedicated people. Whatever he sets his mind to, he was just that type of person where we did sign language. We did sign language, and guess what? He was one of the best sign language interpreters that I ever came across, and he picked it up really, really quickly. So why don't you tell us about your work with rap, but also, because you have some stuff coming up. There's I know you have Friendsgiving coming up this month. Right. There's also a rally. There's something happening in
we have a rally January 14th. But before we get into that, I'd just like to quickly relay a story that about Fareed. Mm-hmm. During the last days of his life, we was looking out for him 24/7. There was always at least one rap member in his apartment with him, and during the last days where he couldn't even get out of bed, we would help him get dressed, and one time he just called all the rap members, the core rap members, to his living room, and he didn't want anyone to help him dress this particular day. And so we waited for him in the living room, and he struggled. He struggled. Every step he took was a struggle. He was in that much pain. And when he finally got to the living room, he needed help to sit down because he had a walker. He was using a walker. And so we had to help him to sit down. He just couldn't sit down by himself. And at this point, he couldn't even lift his head. That's how weak he was. He looked like he weighed 50 pounds. And he looked at all of us, and he says, "I want y'all to know that this has been a labor of love." And I'll always remember those words. Those words are etched in my heart, that this entire journey has been a labor of love. Because this describes exactly why we do what we do, because I left men behind that I love and that I could not go on with my life as if they didn't exist. And this is why I do what I do. Now, let me just briefly say that, to rehash what we've done last session, mm-hmm. We did some historic things. We got the Elder Parole Bill passed the crime committee in both houses. This was historic, never been done before, not a bill of this magnitude. Mm-hmm. And the other parole bill, the Fantani parole bill, that's moving, and that's moving right now. And these two bills together and our advocacy for a transformative parole board, a board that believes in transformation and rehabilitation. These three initiatives transform the entire process of the parole release process. So our elder parole bill is designed for people who are 55 years old and have already served 15 years in prison. And we focus on this particular group because they pose the least risk to public safety. Mm-hmm. They're the least to recidivate. And for the most part, the ones who will be impacted by this bill immediately, you have about maybe 200 people that will be impacted immediately if this bill was to pass today. And these men have already languished in prison for 30 and 40 years. And they're not 55, they're 65 and 70. So these are the ones that our vision is to release these 65 and 70-year-old men who've already been in prison for close to four decades, and some of them for over four decades. Benny Martinez was just released 2 days ago. Wow. After 49 years.
Wow.
We can't let that continue. Yeah. Because this is a crisis. The mass incarceration has created this crisis of people having longer time to do, little opportunities to get out. They're getting old, sick, and dying. Mm-hmm. And since Cuomo took office, close to 700 people, 55 and over, have passed away.
Wow.
75% black or brown. So this is a crisis, man, that we have to address. We just can't let this thing. It's not going to go away on its own. Mm-hmm. So this bill is a just, fair, and humane solution to this elder people dying in prison.
Mm. Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. So you have what's the next rally that's coming up? November?
No, we have a rally.
You have a rally coming up?
We have a rap rally coming up in January the 14th.
Oh, that's Albany.
That's in Albany.
All right, that's Albany. Yes. I thought there was something happening in
November. We have
November.
A town hall.
The town hall, yes. We have a so town tell us about the town hall.
At Westchester County. It's in Westchester Town Hall. And this town is actually a collaboration of Vocal New York and the Hull campaign people. Because these things, you know, we're talking about the punitive culture of New York State. And not only does it punish people by having them languish in prison for decades beyond their parole date, their parole eligibility date.
Yeah.
They've languished into some people 25 years extra.
Yeah.
But they've also languished in solitary confinement.
Yeah. Yeah.
My Cody friend is a man named Jamal Thomas. He's pretty well known in the system. Mm-hmm. And he just got out the box in August after 23 years.
Oh. 23 years in the box.
23 years in the box, straight. 23 years straight. And this is the whole campaign is designed to stop this type of torture.
You have something, Andre?
No, I was just saying, just for our listening audience who is unaware of what the term box means, it really means solitary confinement. Yeah,
extreme isolation. Right. Extreme isolation. That is just inhumane, unjust, dehumanizing. It's torture. The exactly. United Nations repertoire on torture declared anything after 15 days torture.
Mm-hmm.
Anything. It's sensory deprivation. It's no human contact. How do human beings thrive but in relationship with other human beings? And so you're taking that away. And yet, this is your way of rehabilitating, quote and unquote, someone and you know, punishing them because they had committed some sort of infraction within the prison. But what doesn't happen is you don't speak to whatever the infraction was. You don't speak to the root of the issue. And a lot of times it's something as simple as just drug addiction. Drug addiction. And sometimes it's even less than that. Sometimes you're out of place. And you got so many out of place that guess what? Now we're going to give you 90 days and we're going to place you in a box by yourself just because of, you know. So it's just, man. And there's so many other infractions that are, you know, even minimal than that. And once you're in solitary confinement, like, sometimes it's hard to get out. They just look for anything just to keep you, just to keep a warm body in the cell because they know that, you know, they spent umpteen millions of dollars to create a upstate correctional facility. And so they have to maintain this facility full, and it's never been full. That's for sure. It's never been full. I think if I remember, upstate is it's somewhere around like 600 people, give or take, that are there, and a lot of them is double bunk. It's double bunk cells, and your shower is there, because I spent 127 days there. So you have your double bunk, your shower is there, and guess what? There's a door that gets clicked open when they want you to go and have your supposed hour or two of rec, which is all connected to your cell. You don't go out anywhere. You don't have any type of human contact, and that is torture. Thank you for your work on that, and we're gonna come back, but I want to reintroduce Mr. Dixon Anthony with Parole Prep Project, so he can give us an update as well on the work that they're doing.
Right, we work in. First, I should say thanks again for this opportunity. We've been trying to get at you for a while to come back and debrief you on what's been going on in the Capitol and in this area we call mass incarceration in New York State. To sharpen our context, I think that each year that I go to the Capitol and Jose, we are learning. And this particular session, we learned that democracy does not rule in New York State Capitol. The Hart bill had all of the votes on both sides of the aisle, but the governor did not want that to go to the floor to be voted on. That's obstruction of democracy. And so he harnessed the power to be able to write directives thereafter so that the legislative and 10 of democracy could not rule. All the power is in the hands of Cuomo on what happens, so the legislative body. Also, we learned that the PBA is also a power to be reckoned with. And so we are harnessing up a lot of our efforts towards New York State, looking in certain districts to overturn those districts. For years, we all know at this table that the composition of the parole board has primarily been stakeholders that are upstate in the red part of New York State. My reasoning is if a jury of our peers got us kicked out of our community, a jury of our peers should have say so on who comes back, not upstate districts who have these populations that are outsourced from New York going up there doing the gerrymandering and benefiting financially and voting power-wise over New York State population. And primarily what they're doing is using people of color. And so this has to stop. The composition of the parole board is something that we hold very sacred that needs to happen. One of the primary issues that happened for me when I was inside in Lifers Group was, what is the number one issue that we want to see change with parole? And without individuals talking to one another in different facilities, whenever we took a vote on that, the number one issue was who's at the parole board. We knew that whoever was coming to the parole board made the difference. The COs knew that. The superintendent, the counselors knew. We all knew. So it doesn't matter what the legislation law said. It's do people believe that people can change? That's the whole issue. Do we believe that beyond restitution, that there's a time for transformation for a person to enter into society? In other words, we just don't stay at keeping a person in. The goal of our system is to go towards change and release. And that's the intent of the parole board. And it seems like when it deals with people of color, New York Times came out a few years ago and said the parole board shows racial bias. So this is anecdotal. You know, it's stuff that we've been saying, but now it's proven. And it just needs to stop. Hamza and I saw that basically this past session, a lot of times we're not represented inside of those committees. It felt so good. Yeah. To be in those committees and for them to look around and say, you're not just going to push this under. We're here and we're representing those inside. And for the first time, they saw those rooms packed with our people, our families, with advocates, and we were together. The other thing is that it was an individual that was a CO. He was a counselor. He was a PO, and then he became a senior outside PO who was over intercompact state decisions, and he was also over technical violations. Mm-hmm. Well, he was selected by the governor's office to be a commissioner. And we were successful in doing some research, and the policymakers found out that this guy was not fit. In fact, I for one believe he should have excused himself. He was too close to the problem to be the solution. He was not a change agent. And so that's and to me, he was the next Ferguson. He was given the longest tenure, 6 years. So he his career would have been longer and influenced the parole board back towards a pendulum of being punishment.
Yeah.
And that's why he was put there. And I should say, too, to get into the woods, and I just want to end on this. When we think about a change agent, we like think about, well, what is a change agent? A change agent is someone who's going to turn the corner. This guy was not that. And so we believe he was a Ness Ferguson, and he was getting ready to turn it back.
So what was the outcome? He was not...
We successfully blocked his confirmation.
Good. The first time.
First time a governor's appointee was not confirmed by the Senate.
Wow. And that was because...
Our advocacy. We had a coalition, of community activists led by RAP.
That's right. That's right.
Emperor Prep.
Emperor Prep.
My bad. Emperor Prep.
It definitely takes up a village. Yeah, I'm so grateful, man. That's awesome. That's big.
And the officers' union does not particularly have a fondness for our governor. And so we believe that he was put inside there to try to
get favor with the
PBA, with the officers union, and things like that. We believe also that the officers union do not want the whipping post to stop, which is halt. Is against stopping torture chambers inside of our facilities. So they want that to stay there. So what the governor did was saying, it said to both sides of the aisle of our policymakers was, do not let that come to a vote. Again, to carry favor to the officers union.
Wow, that's big. That is big. So what's next for Parole Prep? The Parole Prep project.
Well, and I'm going to mention RAP too. We both worked together as a Voltron unit, and so what we do is in uniquely in Parole Prep is we prepare attorneys and volunteers for to go upstate. Right now, we canvass the whole New York State, up to Buffalo, Clinton. We send lawyers and pro bono. Up there to prepare individuals for a successful parole interview. We've been able to increase the parole release from 20% to 46% of people serving long term and in general, because they know that we are holding them accountable. Another thing we do besides training them is we interface with legislators, and just recently we developed a soft landing for transition. For individuals that are coming home to make a softer landing. And part of that, we just started another group called SOS, which is Survivors of the System, which deals with individuals that can come home in their support group. It's something similar to the veterans. They have one another for their healing, AA, and other groups. We have not been healed.
No. And this is a recurring thing that we want to talk about too, in regards to trauma.
Sure, and it's trauma. And it's really consistent too, as we know that Veterans Day is closely approaching on Monday, November 11th. We certainly want to lift up and acknowledge all of those who have served and who are formerly incarcerated, because we know the trauma that follows from
the
theaters of war. And so we want to really lift you up, and at some point maybe we'll be able to put a show together to talk about our veterans who've served in the military who are formerly incarcerated.
Good point. And we're gonna be continuing also. If we have time today, our sister is on standby. She's also willing to talk a little bit about a bill that she's actually she wrote around prison post-traumatic stress. And so, and I want to actually connect her. And I think that's one of the awesome things that we've been blessed to be able to do here at On Account, is to be able to make the connections between the people doing similar work, and so we can all come at this, you know, as a community. Because that's something that we've always talked about, how there's so many silos, how there's so many, you know, there's so many people, there's wonderful people doing great work in their own way with regards to trying to humanize this thing, you know, called criminal punishment system, the criminal legal system, you know, with regards to parole, both from the inside, at all ends, from the front end, inside, the back end, the reentry. So we have people, wonderful people doing this wonderful work, and I think that we can always do more with regards to unifying our folks and being able to come all together. So, and I think, you know, I'm hoping that this platform here continues to be able to be, you know, that conduit, that one place where we could come and at least make those connections. Because I met this sister a while ago. She was supposed to come on, and she's talking about her relationship between trauma and incarceration. And then we also have our folks that have been on here, Dr. Kirk Anthony James, who does work out of Columbia and NYU, who's formerly incarcerated, and he's got his also his degree is also with regards to trauma, because he's a social worker. Mm-hmm. But then there's also we've had Dr. Samuel Arroyo and George Diaz, who are also trying to coin that phrase with regards to post-prison, post-traumatic stress disorder. And so this is something that's real. I mean, I could tell you, as someone, I didn't serve as much time as both of you gentlemen, and I'm sure you can also speak even more than I can with regards to how 38 years plays a role in developing you know, certain trauma symptoms, and how we relate to the world and to each other based on us trying to survive this unjust system of incarceration, and now trying to really heal. You know, for me, I was just coping. I did 14 years of coping and re-traumatization, right? And then trying, you know, during that time, I was able to meet some wonderful people who took me under the wing and introduced me into to struggle and showed me that there was another way. And so I found my way, but at the same time, there was very little healing that was taking place for me because of the re-traumatization. And I'm sure that that's true for a lot of us. You know, we really don't begin to heal until after we're home. And sometimes it takes several years, because the initial shock of the reentry, right? Luke Mann talks about the difference between reentry and reintegration, right? Reentry is right away. It's like, okay, I'm out the door. And then I start making the initial connections. But then it's now is that, all right, so how do I be in this? How do I reintegrate into the community, into my family, for real, long term? And so there is that difference. And a lot of times the healing, you know, part gets lost in the reintegration, you know, because we're worrying about income, we're worrying about relationships, we're worrying about eating, like simple basic needs that everyone worries about, right? But for us, it's different because we're also dealing with this long history and experience of incarceration. So we're going to be coming back, and hopefully we'll be able to bring the sister on. And I think this is a recurring thing for all of us. And I welcome and I look forward to all of your input with regards to that, because it's a Freudian slip, right? Income. income. We do need income for the radio station. So maybe that's where my head is too. But so become a BAI buddy. I think that's what that was. That was like my subconscious in saying, yeah, BAI buddy. But yeah, but we, your input will be great, because you guys have a wealth of experience and I know
sure.
unique and individual. I don't want to use the word symptom, but how it affects all of us. You know, how that affected all of us. And one thing, you know, I know this is true for you guys, is the reason you're in this work is because of that. You know, you mentioned you left these men behind. We left people behind that we love. You know, I talked about that when we received when we received the award. So congratulations, brother.
Thank you. Congratulations to you too.
Yes, congratulations.
So the Citizens Against Recidivism had their annual honoree and award ceremony, and so Hamza and I both received the Juli Medina Freedom Fighter Award, and I'm just so grateful and honored that I received it alongside you and the other people that received different, but we received, you know, the Freedom Fighter Award, and it was I'm grateful, but I was more grateful just to be among our people and to be recognized among our peers. You know, because this is a different thing, you know, when our peers recognize us. So for me to receive the award from Julio, you know, was a true honor, because, like I said, when I received it, I met Julio while I was inside still. I was putting together the Hispanic Heritage Month celebration event that is done yearly, and we was in Woodburn. This was between 98 and 99, and we invited him to come as a keynote. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience, though, Humza, with regards to receiving the Freedom Fighter Award. What was that like for you?
But that was very moving for me because, you know, I mentioned in my statement as I received the award that, you know, I accept this award in memory of those who, the fallen freedom fighters, Sheikh Noah, mm-hmm. Abdul-Majid, Bashir, and so many others. These are the fallen, our fallen freedom fighters, and I honor them. I pay tribute to them. Mm-hmm. And we still have freedom fighters that are incarcerated, and we just can't let them die. So
no.
I accept this reward for them because they should be out here with us, you know, a part of this movement. And I just want to mention that for me, you know, the healing after 38 years of incarceration, enduring humiliation, degradation, mm-hmm. just total disrespect as a human being, mm-hmm. You know, I find healing in being a part of a movement that's uprooting this racism and punitive system.
That's right.
To me, that gives me healing, man, mm-hmm. that I know that in the end, we can uproot this stuff. Yeah. We can uproot this system and put a more humane system that doesn't humiliate and degrade human beings to the extent that this system does.
And hopefully at the end, we can also say, like Fareed, man, this was a labor of love, you know.
Exactly.
And Eddie, too. Eddie, I mean, we, you know, who taught us we die on our posts? Where does that come from, man? Because I've been using it for so long. I feel like I don't even remember, man, but I'm sure because it, you know, it's reminiscent of us being with our white shirts and bow ties, and so shouts to all of the brothers and sisters from the Nation of Islam, man, because a lot of the teachings play a role in that. We talk about, you know, dying on our posts. We die on our posts, man. There's no retiring for someone who is in this. It really isn't.
And another way that we say it is that, you know, in terms of there's no retirement for us. Mm-mm. When I retire, I'll be in my grave.
Right? That's right. When I retire, I'll be in my grave. So we are at the top of the hour. And so what we're going to do is we are going to be thankful and grateful for all of you who have hung out with us for the last hour. We're going to ask you to stay with us. We're going to be on for another hour. And so what we're going to do is we're going to play. First of all, we want to be thankful to Bob Law because this is his hour. And Bob Law will be on next week.
Mm-hmm.
So From the Streets with Bob Law will be on next week at 11 o'clock at this hour. And so if you're tuning in now at the 11 o'clock hour and you're hoping to listen to Bob Law, I would hope that you stay and listen to us. And thank you, Bob Law, for giving us this time. And so we are at the 11 o'clock hour. So it is 11 o'clock and you're listening to On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Justice Report. On WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM here in NYC. But if you're on the World Wide Web, you're listening to us via www.wbai.org. Listen live. And so thank you for tuning in. And as soon as I can find this card, I will play it for you.
Yeah, and then in the meantime, when we come back, we'll obviously talk about some of the more recent issues that's happening in the news. We'll talk about what happened recently in October, toward the end of October, with the presidential debate that happened in Pennsylvania, rather in Philadelphia, rather, at Eastern Correctional Facility there, where formerly incarcerated leaders hosted a town hall meeting with some of the presidential candidates. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, talk a little bit about the lawsuit that recently occurred around housing discrimination, which is also important. Mm-hmm. So don't you go anywhere, right?
Yes.
We'll be back and we'll be able to talk about some of those things too and have our illustrious guests and powerful leaders who will join with us also add to that conversation.
And I want to say thank you to Denita Ramirez from Richmond, Virginia, who's listening who joined us. She made a donation, and so I'm really grateful to you, Denita Ramirez. Thank you. Richmond, Virginia. So we're hoping that our people from New York State come through. We got the tri-state listening. So wherever you are, wherever you're listening, man, please donate. Give to WBAI.org and become a WBAI buddy in the name of On the Count.
On the Count.
The U.S. prison system incarcerates approximately 2.5 million people, the highest number of any industrialized nation, while prisons remain the fastest growing industry in the country.
People, once again, if you heard it at the 10 o'clock, you're hearing it again now. All my people inside of prison and out, where you at? We are in the studios. We are back in the studios of WBAI 99.5 FM. We were locked out for a little while, but cream always rises to the crop, to the top, right? The cream always rises to the top. You can't keep a good human being down. Injustice could only reign but for so long, and justice comes through. And so this is what happened on Wednesday. And so thank you, and again, thank all of the volunteers, all of the WBAI producers and volunteers, and everyone who makes this thing happen, everyone who showed up to the courts, everyone who circulated. You know, thank you so much. Thank you to all of our supporters, and please become a BAI buddy. Give the number 2 WBAI.org. You can also send the check made out to WBAI Pacifica Radio, and I'm gonna make sure that this is on our social media. So if you happen to be,
sure,
you know, we're on Facebook Live right now. We're back and forth on Twitter. So please connect with us on our social media platforms. But yeah, you can make the check payable to WBAI Pacifica Radio. Send it to 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. Attention, GM. That's WBAI Pacifica Radio, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. Attention, General Manager. And we hope that people come through and give of whatever you can. But as little as $10 a month makes you a BAI buddy, and it's a sustaining member, and you get all the perks and voting and all of that good stuff. I think they have a nice swag bag that they send out. I got mine. And so I'm looking forward to people joining. And so what we're going to do is I'm going to pass it over to Andre, who is going to make a couple of announcements from the other topics that he was talking about, and then we're going to get our sister on to make her announcement. But thank you for tuning in.
Sure.
Andre, it's yours.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us, as Humble said, and thank you for our guests for being in studio. Just a couple of announcements and things we wanted to announce. As you know, formerly incarcerated leadership that exists not only in New York City but nationally is always engaged in affecting meaningful systems change, and so it's important for On the Count to really lift those things up. And fairly recently, on October 28th, we know that there was the first town hall meeting that was held in Philadelphia at Easton Correction Facility, where you had three of the presidential candidates come before formerly incarcerated leaders, and to be probed with questions around mass incarceration, around racist police practices, around criminal justice reform. And it was really interesting. And so we really want to lift up and acknowledge Norris Henderson, who's the founder of Voters Organized to Educate, and equally acknowledge the advisory board members, Vivian Nixon from College Community Fellowship, Deanna Haskins from Just Leadership, and Daryl Atkinson, who also serves as an advisory board member and who were the moderators of that show, I mean, of that town hall meeting. So we want to really acknowledge them. I know Sophia Bendelli, I think, was one of the moderators for, or MC to some degree, for that town hall meeting. It was really, really powerful, and leaders from throughout the city and country had attended that kind of function. And so we're really grateful to them. And we had folks from different organizations, the Fortune Society. I know Stanley Richards and Rob DeLeon and Dr. Ronald Day and others from Fortune, and folks from Osborne was there, and folk from RAP, I'm sure, was there, and folk from the other organization was there. And so we had all of our leaders there, and kind of want to talk to you all, Hamza and
Anthony,
about like your thoughts on that experience, because it's the first of its kind where you had a town hall meeting that was obviously developed by formerly incarcerated leaders to engage presidential candidates. And we also want to lift up the Marshall Project, who obviously kind of like presented that entire experience via media, etc. So, Hamza, Anthony, your thoughts on that really briefly, on that experience, because again, it's powerful, right? For many, many years, we've been trying to do that. Unfortunately, several of the candidates did not attend the town hall meeting, and so they cannot expect us to be supportive of them at all as a huge voting block for them. And so, you know, Senator Kamala Harris, Senator Booker, and the other president-elect, Tom Steyer, had attended. So we are thankful that they attended, but the other elected or candidates, they cannot look for support from us because they did not come to the table and talk to us like we wanted to.
I think if we're not at the table, we don't eat, bottom line. But this is the thing. You know, we not being invited to these convenings allows them to define what mass incarceration is or isn't. And the people most impacted are the ones who must define mass incarceration, because if they define mass incarceration as just people that were locked up for drugs or nonviolent drug offenses, then the people who've been in prison for decades for violence will languish in prison and die. Their definition of mass incarceration is not our definition of mass incarceration, and their solutions to mass incarceration and not our solution. That's why we have to be on that table to lead this movement to decarcerate America.
Right. Power to my people. I'm a big proponent of self-determination for people that's been impacted and touched by the criminal legal system. So I looked at it in awe the first time ever that this occurred. I applauded the transparency and calling people to accountability. And it was from stakeholders that was primarily impacted. I honestly believe that in a lot of our nonprofit circles, a lot of what happened is that we are not allowed self-determination like people that's been oppressed by other groups have been allowed to self-determine their course and to think independently. A lot of what's going on inside of our areas and our spaces is individuals are just being used or called in after something is framed. And so I really looked at it, and Cory Booker, I think, was called on a hot table. And we was able to dissect where he's really at and called him to bear.
Sure.
I really appreciated that. That went viral. I put it inside of the SOS group, the Survivors of the System group, so that people can really see what's really happening. I wish that happened more, and that's something for us to really think about. Whoever was the genius behind that, the people that participated inside that, man, five stars.
Sure. We really want to lift up Norris Henderson, because Norris essentially, with the organization Voters Organized to Educate, has pushed this for several years. And we know Norris, and Norris is a huge supporter of the work we do here in New York City. So big up to Norris, and obviously to Vivian Nixon, Deanna Haskins, and Daryl Atkinson for the amazing work that they did on that day. It takes a lot. These are awesome leaders who are committed to this work. And I have to just make a correction. It's not Sophia Bendelli, who I know from MacGyver's College, but it's Asha Bendelli,
who was
responsible for moderating a lot of that, and big shout out to her too. So yeah, it's true, you know, Hamza and Anthony, that the work that we do and what has been done to get us to that point is important. And I absolutely agree with you, Hamza. We have to be at the table. We have been historically excluded from the decision and discussion making processes, as Eddie would always talk to us about, and it was important that we be at the table. And the culmination of this kind of meeting is obviously demonstrated that when we commit ourselves and we organize, that we can ultimately bring people to the table rather than be asked to come to the table. Yeah. So a big shout out to everyone. And I know we have our sister Harmony on the air, one of our hosts on this show. And Harmony, thank you so much for joining us. You're on the count. I know you have some announcements that you want to make. And so thank you for joining us. And we know that you and Rusty will be in studio soon. How are you feeling this morning?
I am feeling motivated and fired up. Good morning. Good morning to everyone. Good morning, good morning to all of our listeners out there. Always a shout out to the women who are invested in Taconic and Avion as well. That's right. We are lifting it up for the women. Sorry that I couldn't be there. I'm traveling. You know, this is a 3-day weekend, but I knew that you brothers would hold it down. Excuse me. I am very excited. I'm very excited about being in the room at Eastern Correctional Facility. And I know you guys have covered all of course, the data and information, but I need to talk about the power that was in the room. There were so many people from 1 year to 2 year to thousands of years of freedom walking through a facility that is now closed and used as a museum, but all of the history. So when I walked in, I felt the pain and the suffering of the people who were there in that facility. It wasn't just like walking in. It was like walking into a place where you knew now you were making a difference, even because you walked through the door as a free person. It was phenomenal, and we must do something like that again, aside from having the president elects come in and have those conversations. And then you saw our brothers and sisters really teeter and go on and groove into what it means for us and what we want to see in the future and what those elect candidates can do if elected into the White House. It was so powerful. And one of the things I have to say about President-elect Booker is that, I mean, running Booker is because he said, how come nobody, he shouted it out, how come none of the other candidates thought that it was important to be in the room? I think that that was a very powerful statement, and we must closely pay attention to who did not show up. But other than that, I just needed to let you know how exciting it was to be, and not just in that room, but then we went back to one of the hotel areas where I just sat on the couch at one point and looked around the room and was elated, because 30 years ago, that was not happening. 20 years ago, that was not happening. Powerhouses all together in harmony, focusing on how we destroy mass incarceration. I know y'all know how I am. I just got so excited. I'm still excited about that opportunity. Also, with so many things that were going on while we were not on the air, we want to make sure that people are supporting us and making sure that WBAI stays on the air. There was the Free Her Conference as well out in Montgomery, Alabama, where a lot of the sisters went out for the Free Her Conference with Andrea James for Women and Girls in Incarceration. That was going on as well. We had we know that we have the Closed Rikers Movement, which was voted on as well. That was happening. But we want to make sure that one of the things that I learned in this journey, and I'm not going to take up too much time, you know, I get excited, but one of the things that I learned in this journey is we have to, everybody is saying that there's so much going on. Right, there's so many things going on, but the bottom line is we need to find a lane and get in that lane and push that lane forward. If it's young women and girls, if it's men, if it's rap, whoever it is that you want to be able to, if it's policy change that you want to be able to make the difference, get in that lane and let's move forward, because that's what I felt, the power in Eastern Correctional Facility. We had some powerhouses and we were in our lanes and moving the agenda forward. So it might be a lot going on, but I want people to be encouraged. Find that lane, let's get in it, and let's destroy mass incarceration. Keep hope alive.
Love it.
Yeah, thanks so much for that, Yolanda. Obviously, always inspiring. Your passion is invigorating, and it's something that we all continue to aspire to maintain in the face of, like, many of the challenges that we encounter when we're lifting up this idea of criminal legal or criminal justice reform. So it's really, really important about, you know, making sure that we stay committed to that. And I know, you know, Hamza Anthony, you're here, and you've graced us with your presence. And, you know, again, this idea of this town hall meeting and having presidential candidates come before us was the first of its kind. It's unprecedented. Again, a first major conversation between presidential candidates and people affected or impacted by mass incarceration. And, you know, then there are other unprecedented issues that's been occurring within the criminal justice reform movement as it relates to discrimination and us not being at the table. Fairly recently, there's been a lawsuit against that was just settled. And the Fortune Society have been involved in this. The owners of the Sandcastle, which is a 917-unit apartment complex in Far Rockaway, agreed to pay a record-setting of $1.18 million in payment as a part of the pretrial settlement because this complex was discriminating against people who have had criminal justice involvement. And so, you know, big shout out to Joanne Page who held this. And this is not to single out or lift up any other organization above the other, just giving credit to where it's due to those who advanced these things. And so, you know, this settlement is a warning, like, against across the bow, right, of any landlord in America who blatantly refuses to rent apartments to people with criminal justice involvement. And this is something that Joanne had quoted. But it's important. This is also unprecedented that formerly incarcerated people are challenging the idea of them being discriminated against owing to trying to have a place to live. Right. Similarly, right, when it comes to employment with the Fair Chance Act. So we're localizing ourselves in places to make sure that those things lifted up. And Hums and Anthony, just want to get your thoughts on, you know, this idea around housing discrimination. What does that mean for you? And just share your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I work with individuals that are coming home, and Jose, I think, has friends that he knows personally that's been affected by this. It's harder on parole and it's harder on the nonprofits to find individuals housing. It's a shame that we're living in one of the most worthiest, worth infested environment where money is there, but we have people that are homeless, that are sleeping on the street. We have young kids, both black and white. That's 18 years old. It hurts.
And Latino. Yeah, sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. This mm-hmm. And so it just doesn't make any sense to discriminate against people that need housing. And so we find out that this is not collateral consequences. These are life-changing consequences that have happened. These we're being given a social death when we come home. It's better for a person to be inside where they can have warmth and they can have three meals, we're finding out, then let them outside when society is now locking them out. And we're talking about people that are 60, 70 years old. Why not? And that's why we want them out at 50, 55 years old, so that they can acquire employment, so that they can work, so that they can get the things that are needed. Instead of us becoming liabilities, we want to be an asset. Let them out early where this won't happen.
There's another issue here. If we release the elders who are community ready and pose no threat to public safety, the amount of money that you actually yes. save by releasing these elders is more than sufficient to address not only the housing crisis, but other crises in our communities. Mm-hmm. So it's to our interest to completely transform this system so that we can have the finances to address these other issues.
Yeah. And Yolanda, you're still with us, right? Are you coming in?
Yeah.
All right, good. We can hear you. And we also have our sister, Shawana Vaughn. Can you hear us? Shawana?
I'm here. Yeah,
awesome. Okay, good. So we'll bring you on a second. Go ahead. Finish your thought, brother.
No, please.
Yeah, and I you know, I agree with you, Hamza and Anthony. The really reallocation of funding could subsidize these housing units that are needed to have our elder, our folk, our aging population that coming out of prison, as well as so many other people impacted by the criminal justice system. I was just at a policy meeting around housing a few days ago, and they were just talking about this crisis around housing and what are some of the interventions that's needed. In the end, right, it's about making sure vouchering is submitted on time, because those vouchers are held up that sometimes interferes with people getting access to housing. And then just the idea of allocation of funding to make sure people are getting the kind of housing that they need. The other part is addressing landlords and holding them accountable because of their own bias and their refusal to adhere to the law. They punish and discriminate against people who have criminal justice involvement. And so this unprecedented lawsuit that obviously was settled demonstrates that landlords will be held accountable when you discriminate against people who have criminal justice involvement.
So we have our sister on the line, and it's actually a good segue. We could definitely make the connection, because if we're talking about our men and women and people who are found across the gender spectrum and how they identify, who are being released from prison and now working on trying to get housing, which is one of the biggest issues that we have. And so here we are, people who are already suffered trauma already from pre-incarceration, and now here we are being released and not having nowhere to live. And so now there's this new trauma or re-traumatization around housing. And so it's definitely a connecting theme. And the sister is doing work around that, and she actually has a bill. And so Shawana Vaughn is the executive director and co-founder of the nonprofit called Silent Cry. And I don't want to give it any injustice. And so I'll just ask our sister to tell us a little bit about Silent Cry and then tell us about your bill. Shawana?
Hello? Hi, I'm here. Yes, I'm here.
Okay. So yes. You heard the question?
Yes. You want me to tell you about Silent Cry and about the bill?
Tell us a little bit about Silent Cry and then about the bill. Go ahead.
Okay. So Silent Cry is basically out of my own silent tears. I do mass incarceration and gun violence prevention. I was born in prison. I went to prison at 17. And my brother has been murdered for gang violence. So Silent Cry was basically out of my own tears to help others so that the cries are not silent but actually heard. And that is the gist pretty much of Silent Cry, is to bring attention and awareness and try to do prevention instead of aftermath of a lot of things that we do.
So this is New York based. Is New York based? It's a nonprofit. When did you start?
In 2012.
All right, and so you've been doing work around trauma, which is the connection. Tell us specifically about that, and tell us about the bill, because we want people to support that.
Yes. So my work around trauma is, I do a gala called Healing Through Pain. I've done it for the last 6 years. It is a tribute to my brother. It encompasses 25 people, siblings that have been affected by gun violence, and 25 parents. And I've held it at Riverside Church. And so I try to take a holistic approach even to that event by allowing people to be informed and allowing people a place to heal or just express their grief, even in the midst of a gala. And so that's my give back for that.
These are formerly incarcerated people coming home that are able to come and you connect with, and they're able to receive
absolutely
services with you. Okay, go ahead.
Absolutely. And so the bill that I'm doing for trauma that is around mass incarceration is called Post-Traumatic Prison Disorder, Shawana W76337. The primary goal of the bill for me.
Can you give me the bill again for our listeners?
Yes.
I think it went a little too fast, and I want to write it down so we can share it. So go ahead. Give us the bill again.
It is Post-Traumatic Prison Disorder, Shawana W76337. And Brian Benjamin is the person who will be sponsoring this bill for New York. And the reason for this bill was because in all the reform that people are talking about, we're not really, we're talking about mental health, but we're not putting bills. We're not making sure that people are well. And my bill focuses on people doing longer than 10 years and post-incarceration. And I believe it is vital because we know that people doing long-term time, life without the possibility of parole, lifers, and just extremely amounts of time are not getting the supportive services that they deserve. They're not getting holistic, comprehensive mental health services. And then we've seen an uprise of juvenile lifers being released. But nobody has taken care of their mental, and yet you're letting them out saying, go be well. But nobody coming out of prison is well. And we're very clear that nobody is well coming out of prison. And it takes longer than others for the effects to show up, but they do show up. And I'm asking for post-incarceration that we offer therapy, talk therapy, art therapy, music therapy. I'm even proposing marijuana because we give marijuana to post-traumatic stress disorder. We give it to postpartum. We give it to people with anxiety. Yet off the backs of Latinos and Blacks, marijuana has put many a people in prison for overdue sentences. But yet we don't get the reparation from it as other people are reaping the benefits while some of us still sit in prisons behind marijuana, which I think is absolutely unjust.
So tell us a little bit more like about the bill specifically. Like, what are you calling for? And also, do you have like, is there like an upcoming event where people could come out? Because I know you sent me a flyer. You did send me a flyer. So talk a little bit about that.
Yes. So I am doing the Feast at the Round Table. It will be at 40 East 35th Street at the Community Church in the dining hall. It is for formerly incarcerated people and their entire families, in which I will share information about the bill, break bread, and hopefully we come away with a plan for 2020. And this bill is a mental health bill. It's a mass incarceration bill because, and like I said, I'm asking for a lot of things in this bill, but I'm also asking for vendor therapy within institutions because it is hard for people to go to therapy. Black and brown people, we're not used to the idea of therapeutic. And to do that, you have to be with somebody that you trust or somebody that you can build a rapport with. And that doesn't happen in institutions. And so I'm asking for vendor therapy and alternatives to medication because we're all clear that the pill lines in prison are astronomical because the pharmaceutical companies are actually making really good money off of people incarcerated. So I want alternatives to medication, alternatives to big brand companies like Pfizer, and they're out here. And so I want to be able to create service providers that can go back into institutions and provide these services.
You're obviously speaking, in case our listeners don't get it, you're obviously speaking from personal experience, too. So why don't you share a little bit, you know, just in the next minute about your personal experience with regards to incarceration? Because you just say you said you were born in prison. There's a shock. There's a shock for a lot of us. People listening, like, hold up. She said she was born in prison. Then she said she wound up in prison at 17. So I mean, maybe it's just a nosy journalist in me, but
no,
I'd like to know more about that piece.
Absolutely not. Like I said, for me, April 15th, 1978, I was born in Corona State Prison for Women in Riverside, California. And so my journey started in captivity on a plantation to a mother that was shackled and chained to a bed giving birth to me. And I was further leased to the foster care system. And ultimately, at 17, I was myself, incarcerated at Valley State Prison for Women in Chowchilla, California. And so I know that post-traumatic prison disorder is valid because I suffer from it. And because nobody could label my issue, I gave it a name. And I know that other people suffer from the effects of prison. And I am hoping that this bill will help me help them. Because, you know, the effects of prison, like I was 17. So for me, the effects of prison are long-lasting. I saw things that were unconscionable. You go to solitary confinement. People don't understand that in and of itself is a whole nother form of trauma.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier for sure. And here in New York, we have the HALT Act. And I think it was Anthony who mentioned the HALT Act. So that's the Humane Alternatives to Long-Term Confinement Act. And this is something that we all need to support indeed.
Absolutely.
Here in New York, so we can end extreme isolation and the torture of solitary confinement here in New York. So why don't you tell our listeners how we can support the work that you're doing the next minute or so, and then mention again the event that you mentioned that's coming up, so then we can
Absolutely.
Have it, and I'm going to wind up sharing it on the comp pages as well. So Feast of the
Thank
Round
so
Table
much.
Dinner. Go ahead.
Yes. So you can actually find me at Silent Cry, which is SilentCryInc at Gmail. Or you can simply call me. My number is 718-200-2720.
So you're okay with giving your number over the air? You're
gonna
get a whole lot of calls.
I am okay with giving my number.
You can't blame us, man, if you know they start calling you talking about, hey sis, I saw your picture online and what up? No, go ahead.
No, you know what? I feel that in this work, you got to be accessible. And so for me, I don't mind giving out my real information because I'm trying to give out real help.
We appreciate your help. And we're gonna wind up producing a show so you could come on with some other folks doing trauma work.
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
And thank you so much for sharing your story. We'd certainly like to have you on at some later point, perhaps having Dr. James in to come in to talk about the idea, the intersection between trauma and incarceration, and what does that look like. And you know, I the name of your bill makes me think about Dr. Joy Leary's work, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. And you know, and one of the things that she maintains and posits in her work is that, you know, there's this idea of dissonance that's caused. And so when people experience dissonance, right, they either try to remove it. There's this fight or flight kind of experience that happens. And so if there is a correlate to the bill that you're passing around post-traumatic trauma, I think
prison disorder,
and that is that, you know, when we are incarcerated, there's this element of dissonance that exists. It's what we know when we come into that experience, and then what we experience while there. And so that dissonance obviously creates trauma that also produces hypervigilance. There's a heightened sense of fear. Mm-hmm. There is this hopelessness that exists, all of which is produced as a result of the trauma that one experiences, right?
Absolutely.
So I think the bill is certainly timely,
and sure.
I think it makes sense, and we certainly look to have you on soon.
Yeah, we definitely support
Thank
that.
Thank you so much. And I really want everybody that has been impacted by incarceration to come out November the 30th to the Feast at the Round Table, because you know what? This is not an I or we or some movement. This is a everybody, all of us, all the time movement.
Thank you so much for
and
that.
Really
and our sister is on the air, too,
experience.
Still, so I wanted to make sure she chimes in. Did you have any thoughts around that? And I know that we're also, being that we're talking about trauma, and we also talked about housing. We talked about a couple of things today, right? But we're on for 2 hours. And we've been off for a month. And so, you know, hopefully our listeners, we're trying to,
May seem as though we're all over the place to some degree. But because we've been off for 1 month, mm-hmm. we felt that this 2 hours would allow for us to share with you different areas of criminal justice or criminal legal reform that we're addressing. So our listening audience, be patient with with us. The following weeks will be a lot more focused in like one area specifically. So thank you, listening audience, for being patient with us.
And write to us. Write to us. Send us messages.
Go ahead, sis. I'm sorry. You guys were talking about something and you had me crying when you talked about age and release in prison.
Yeah, it's definitely something that is emotional for all of us. And so for sure, yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. But yeah, we here at On the Count, I'm sure I speak for all of us here, man. Well, that's something that we all support.
No, absolutely.
That has to happen.
So, yeah, we were inside with so many of the leaders and mentors of us when we were incarcerated, the Lukemans, the Eddies. You know, when I came to prison, when I was upstate, you know, I met some of the men there, like Kishaka and others. Big shout out to Kishaka.
Yeah.
They had 76 numbers when I came to prison in 1992. And it was unfathomable for me to think that the people were in prison since 1976. I was like a couple of years old.
I met another Hamza, right? A Muslim brother that had a 70 number.
Yeah, and so I remember Hamza, Brown Hamza. I remember Hamza,
with the
70
number.
Yeah, I remember Hamza very well.
Wow.
And to think that, you know, their strength, right, and commitment in the face of that was inspiring for me, and it was because of their dedication to making sure the generations after them would perpetuate the legacy of criminal justice reform while even in prison. Is what inspired me to change my life at 21 years old.
That's right.
Exactly. We still have Jaleel. Jaleel just got denied.
That's right.
Yep.
Just
got denied. Shout out to Jaleel.
Shout out to him. Shout out to Kareem Latif.
Yeah.
You know, these brothers, man, they don't just pass on the baton, and they continue till they die.
Yeah.
They will
and
be our mentors and leaders until they die.
And so many women who also are in Bedford Hills, who have been in prison for decades upon decades, who have inspired and mentored so many of the women of whom I cannot speak for, but I do know just
peripherally. We got our sister on the line. She could say the name. Say
Yolanda,
the name,
are you there? Justice Harmony?
Say her name.
I am here. We have, of course, we have the Kathy Bodines and we have the Mrs. Prices. A lot of people like to talk about Mrs. Price. I actually missed her because she was one of the ones who said, you got to get out of here and make sure you're successful.
Mm.
You know, like really, we call them moms and aunties and all of those that were inside. And I think that we do need to lift them up, and we really do need to look at aging in prison. I think there's one young lady, I didn't actually know her, but I know that she passed away and she had the longest sentence for a woman in New York City.
I read about her, Valerie Gator.
Valerie Gator is the longest serving woman in New York State Prison. Mm-hmm. She died at 61. She served over 40 years.
Wow.
And the thing is that the Governor Cuomo had the opportunity twice to release this woman.
Yeah.
This woman was iconic. She is responsible for helping a generation of young women at Bedford Hills transform their lives.
Yeah.
You know what that is? Help an entire generation.
Yeah.
And she was allowed to die. Shame on this governor.
Yeah, that's right.
Can I speak to that too?
Go ahead, brother.
By comparison, Governor Cuomo has one of the lowest release rates for compassionate release.
Mm.
And we're dealing with, when we talk about compassionate release, people that are suffering from some type of physical ailment.
Hold on, you're talking about the progressive Democratic governor of New York State? Is that who you,
sadly.
The progressive guy who has that record? Say that again.
He has one of the lowest clemency release for people that file for compassionate release. I mean, out of the 50 governors that's in the union today, he has one of the lowest, the 10 lowest. And so, like, by comparison, if you was to look to California, it's like a Governor Brown released like 1,190 people on clemency, including compassionate release. Governor Cuomo is like one of the lowest when you look at all of them. It's sad. And so we're talking about death by incarceration. We're talking about people that went in when they were 17, 18. Right now, there's a law that says consider their age once they appear before the parole board.
Mm-hmm.
How can we consider their age when there is no parole board to push them there? And we're talking about people that that cannot remember their crime, that has Alzheimer's, being denied parole on their bed at Fishkill. I saw this happen.
Mm.
The parole board went there and denied the individual and said he didn't show any remorse. Well, he cannot remember his crime.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't even know his mother's name.
Wow.
This is the type of punitive culture that we're dealing with in New York State. We have, right now, we are the second largest per ratio capital of the union to have one out of every five individuals that have life inside of our system. One out of every five individuals have a life sentence in New York State.
Wow.
We're one of the most punitive of all the states. And when we talk about the what we call the box, this torture chambers, we are manufacturing mental health cases. A third of the people that go in there already are pre-diagnosed as having some type of mental disorder. And so we're dealing with layers of trauma once we're inside. And then have to deal with social death once we're out.
So I wanted to thank, so we could, I know they have other stuff there and they're on the phone. I wanted to thank our sisters for joining us over the phone. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Shawana Vaughn, Silent Cry, Be on the Lookout. We're going to actually post it on our pages. Thank you so much for joining us, sis.
Well, you know what? I just want to thank you guys because far too often, women do not get the acknowledgement in this mass incarceration field. And the rules are not even set for women to be in prison, because in 2019 we should not be celebrating a victory for women that are no longer getting shackled while giving birth, because it never should have been in the beginning.
That's right. And thank you for highlighting that. And of course, you know, we have Harmony and Justice, who are going to make sure that our listeners always hear that.
Absolutely. I also wanted to just call out a few more women's names, because I wanted to make sure that we shout out.
I gotta get her back on because I want to hear the rest of that. So Yolanda, if you're listening, just give me a second, I'll bring you back on.
And yeah, you know, again, Jalil Anthony, thank you so much for joining us in studio. We certainly have to have you back to talk to our listening audience about the work you're doing. I know that RAP is doing some fantastic work. You know, I think about Fareed and, you know, when I used to talk to him all the time, there was an element of humility and there was a depth of knowledge there that was certainly inspiring to move us along. And I know, Anthony, that the work that you're doing is equally as important. And I think Joseph Robinson is still affiliated with you all in some way.
Right.
And
he's one of our core advisors.
He's one of the core advisors. And big shout out to Joe Robinson
and his wife Sheila Rule,
each of whom are really, really committed leaders and advocates for this work. And so I thank you both for joining us. Your presence is really important for us.
I want to mention our individual, too. You must shout out Paul Clark, who was in Green Haven. He was 18 years old, and he just filed for clemency. And he will die in prison probably if he's not granted clemency. He was at 18 years old. He was given 50-something years.
Wow. Make sure we have that. Make sure we have that so we can post it and get some support around that clemency. Are you back on? Can you hear me? Yolanda?
Yes, hello?
Yes. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much again. I hope you heard the names of also the women who are out also fighting on the vineyard for the freedom of other women and men. I hope you heard the names of the long-termers who, Judy Clark, we're so excited about her being out and working with us to make sure that she gives us all of the current data on what is happening with women, and Pam Smart, Donna Hilton, of course, Ms. Wright, and Joy. Shout out to all of them who even may be listening this morning. I hope that they are. Shawana, thank you so much. You know, I all I could think about when you were talking was about a healing, because that's one of the things that I know it's a lot of different areas. Again, I say that because the people who I know who we're working with, both those who are affected and affected, or church, family, faith-based, people don't know what to do. But there's a lot of healing that needs to go on. So whatever, again, whatever lane that you choose to join, it would be, you know, we need to look at the process of healing across our nation, period, but we need to look at the process of allowing people who have criminal justice histories to heal. If I can, you know, I can't pass up on the opportunity to not talk about New York City Housing Authority, because when you talk about housing, he said one in five, right, have a life sentence. I wrote that down because, you know, I got to do my research, right, because I know I got to take a look at that. Andre keeps me on my P's and Q's when it comes to policy and looking up my data. I need to look at that, but I also need to talk about housing. 1 in 14 in New York City live in public housing. You might call it the projects. We don't call it that anymore because people are a project, and that's what they said in the past, and now we live in housing developments. So of those developments, there's a program that allows individuals to come back in and live with their family members who already have apartments in public housing. Please make sure you call 212. I'm going to say it slowly because I get on humble about that. 212 306-6024 with any criminal justice question about living in public housing. And if you are currently looking for an apartment, I implore you today to go online and apply for public housing. Because it takes 5 to 8 years to get in for regular citizens, not just because you have criminal justice history, but when it comes time for you to get in, laws and rules have changed. So please don't screen yourself out. If they told you that you got the letter, you can't live there. Please no longer look at those exclusions and go in and find out what is the real base of information. That number will give you all of the information you need. That is also if you're currently incarcerated or if you are want to live in public housing. Please make sure that you know New York City Housing Authority is the first in the country to make sure that we took a look and making sure people are able to live back with their family. You may not be able to skip the list. You may not be able to get that priority, but you can live with family members who are already living in public housing. Again, that's 212-306-6024. And I need to say to you that the program currently has 250 applications. 147 people have reunified with their family, and you need to hear this number for you data geeks out there. 6 people have been rearrested and have new convictions. You know why? And remember, NYCHA is a landlord. We're not a program, right? We're a landlord. So you know why only 6 people have been rearrested and convicted? Because when you give a person a place to stay, they don't need a bunch of programs. They just need their family to help them stay free. And that's a proven, you can look at the Vera Institute of Justice for the evaluation and data. It's proven that if you give them a place to go back to their family, they won't go back to prison. So please look that up because that is a huge resource that folks don't know about.
Thank you so much for that. Thank you for joining us, sis, and looking forward to you being in the studio and we spending a whole hour just talking about how your work inside NYCHA has been so beneficial to our men and women and gender nonconforming folks coming home after incarceration. So thank you for that.
And we'll certainly get, you know, at some point, you know, as I'm hosting this work, I'm at Fortune and both sides of the bars, which has about 80, there are 80 stations throughout the nation. At some point, I'll make sure I get each of you on that television show that Fortune hosts. And so Yolanda, certainly we're talking about housing, especially following the recent lawsuit, a discrimination lawsuit that's happened around housing. I want to make sure I get NYCHA on and get RAP and the work that we're doing with parole on too. So that's another.
So closing statements from our in-house guests. And thank you again for joining us over the phone. We will be in touch.
Thank
and make
you
sure
so
I get all of that info that you share so we can post it on our pages as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would love to connect with the person that is in your studio that does RAP.
Oh, for sure. That's what we do. That's what we do. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Closing from our brothers. So, Hamza.
Okay. I want to invite all our listeners to join RAP for this rally in Albany on January the 14th. We have buses, free buses, leaving from various locations throughout the city. We offer our lunches. And this is an opportunity for your voice to be heard. We want these legislators to hear our community's voice. And the only way we can do this is by going to them and letting them know who we are and how we feel about these issues. So this is a big opportunity. We're looking to bring at least 500 people from our communities to Albany so that they can see the power that our community possess in dealing with this mass incarceration issue. Also, we have a town hall meeting on Tuesday, November the 18th, and it's at Yonkers. In fact, you can go to the RAP website. It's rappcampaign.com, and you get all the information, all the events and activities that we got going on for the month. Go to rapp.com, RAP.
Yep. Thank you so much for that, and you will be able to see all of the upcoming events and be able to see all the work that you're doing. Is the Friendsgiving event
It's listed there too.
All right, cool. Because I'm looking forward to that. I have one of my coworkers who was telling me about that she went to one of the meetings at RAP and she was like, "Oh, you know they have a Friendsgiving coming up." So I'm like, "Yo, okay, we're going." So definitely be on the lookout. Go on their page, brother Anthony Dixon.
Yeah. In addition to our January 14th event that we're having, We also have the Parole Preparation Project is having a Welcome Home event. One of the best parties probably in New York City. You're invited to. You can go to our website on Parole Preparation Project to put in your application. And we're going to have around 400 to 500 attorneys there that's been doing this pro bono work and volunteers. Mm-hmm. We're going to have stakes persons there. We're going to have individuals that came home this year celebrating their homecoming. And it's just a fantastic event. Please go online. That's the Parole Preparation Project. And also, if you want to come with us upstate in January, go to Release Aging People in Prison Campaign and fill out the application. We have to know beforehand so we know how many buses we have to order. And it doesn't matter where you're at in New York State, we will order a bus to get you there.
That's right. Thank you so much for joining us, our in-studio guests. Release rap. We have rap here. We have Parole Prep here. We have Siobhan Vaughn with Silent Cry. We have NYCHA. So, you know, we covered some folks. I wasn't able to get our friend from Cake. I apologize. So we were trying to get some folks over here from Solitary Confinement. But we're going to do a show around that as well. We yeah. And the folks from Jail USA who are also doing some work around Close Rikers and the pretrial and bail reform and all of that and all of that stuff there. And so, but we're looking, we're going to be promoting and producing a lot of these individual programs upcoming. Andre?
Yeah, and to Humble's point, it's important that, you know, we lift up all of the organizations that's part of this criminal legal reform movement. None is better than the other, and we should never, no one should ever presume that we're trying to advance another organization above the other. All of the organizations that are part of this criminal legal reform movement should be highlighted and acknowledged for the work that they're doing. And On the Count will serve as a place where those organizations can be highlighted and lifted up. So we want to make sure that that's very clear to our listening audience, that all of the organizations, if you're doing this work, if you're committed to it, if you're in integrity with it, we will make sure that we get you on the show.
And reach out to us. You can reach out to us. We are on Facebook, Twitter. You can reach out to me as well directly. But just send messages, man. Send messages through onthecount@gmail.com. Send messages through, you know, Facebook and Twitter, On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Justice Report. And one of those organizations is called the Alliance of Families for Justice. And I just want to say big shout out to our sister over there, Sophia Elijah. She'll be on in the studio pretty soon. Yeah. And they have the Justice Collective a regional conference. So the Justice Collective invites all of you to their sixth annual regional conference on the impact of mass incarceration on families and communities. And this is hosted by the Alliance of Families for Justice, taking place Friday, November 15th, 5 to 8. I'm slowing down, Yolanda. I heard your voice in my head, and so I'm slowing down. So the Alliance of Families for Justice is having this event Friday, November 15th, 5 to 8 at the atrium at the Albany Housing Authority, 200 South Pearl Street. Go on the Alliance of Families for Justice website and you get all the info. They also have a Saturday, November 16th event. And these are free events that are taking place. The Alliance of Families for Justice Collective holding this up in Albany, but they also have their meetings here in New York. And so big shout out, be on the lookout, and support the work that the Alliance of Family Justice is doing in supporting all of our families. There's also a screening of Harriet that's coming up. And so we're on the lookout for that November 9th. At the Brooklyn NAACP. So if you're looking, it's a Facebook event. So those of you who are on Facebook, you can look for it taking place Saturday, November 9th. Is that right now? Am I that off? Is that taking place right now? We also have True Justice, Social Justice Movie Night. So True Justice, which is a Bryan Stevenson's film that has been going around. And so we are in support of the work that he's doing because it's awesome. Sure. It is awesome. It is unique. We know that this new iteration of slavery that we call mass incarceration is that. And so we have to call that what it is. So Tuesday, November 19th from 6 to 9 at the Teresa Long Student Center, which is 55 West 13th Street, New York, New York. And there will be filming the HBO documentary film True Justice by Bryan Stevenson. So definitely be on the lookout for that. And I'm sure if you go on Neighborhood Benches, you can find that information out. And so I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you to From the Streets with Bob Law, which will be back on at the 11 o'clock hour next week. Thank you to our On the Count listeners and the WBAI people. WBAI is back. And we're closing out as we always do. Thank you for listening to another edition of On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Justice Report. Don't give in, don't give out, don't give up. Stand tall in spite of all and stay on the count. They definitely know what to do. And don't forget, become a WBAI buddy. Give to WBAI.org.
See no changes. Wake up in the morning and I ask myself, is life worth living? Should I blast myself? I'm tired of being poor and even worse, I'm black. My stomach hurts, so I'm looking for a purse to snatch. Cops give a damn about a Negro. Pull a trigger, kill him, he's a hero. Get a to the kids, who the hell cares? One less hungry mouth on the welfare. First, ship them, don't let them deal with brothers. Give them guns, step back, watch them kill each other. It's time to fight back, that's what Huey said. Two shots in the dark, now Huey's dead. I got love for my brothers, but we can never go nowhere unless we share with each other. We gotta start making changes. Learn to see me as a brother instead of two distant strangers. And that's how it's supposed to be. How can the devil take a brother if he's close to me? I let it go back to when we played as kids, but then changed. And that's the way it is. Come on, come on.
That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh, yeah.
We at WBAI are reaching out to you, our listeners, volunteers, and members, to step up with us as we work toward complete stability for our Pacifica network and WBAI radio station. If every one of you within the sound of my voice go to WBAI.org and sign up to be a BAI buddy, we will be on the way to accomplish all that we dream is possible for us and for our influence on the world. And we all know the world needs WBAI Pacifica, so step up with us. As the numbers of buddy subscribers rise, the closer we come to reducing our fund drives, securing our antenna, and being able to find a stable home. That's the BAI buddy at WBAI.org.
Oh, turn the music back on.
In a minute. First, noble human Homer Simpson will explain his primitive yet beautiful culture.
But perhaps Earth's greatest achievement is moon rocks. Oh, and the golden age of radio.
Ooh. Truly.